Okay, well, so welcome everybody to the meditation class for this afternoon. Now, before we start, someone has to remind me what's the timing for today. We go some teaching till how far? What time do we start the meditation? 3:15 start the meditation and then meditate till 4 and then Q&A till 4:30.
Got it.
4:15. Q&A till 4:15. All right. Okay, very good. Unless your meditation is so good that you answer all the questions yourself. Looks like there's a few people still coming in. Okay, so what I'd like to talk about for the meditation this afternoon is some loving kindness meditation. And I talked about this a little bit on the Friday night, if any of you were there, and I'd like to this afternoon go over what I talk about on the Friday night again and see if we can sink it in, let it sink in a little bit more deeply. One of the crucial things about loving kindness meditation, and the most crucial thing, the most important thing to remember, is that it's a meditation on feelings. It's not a meditation on words. It's not a meditation on something physical like the breath. It's not a meditation on imagination. It's not about the idea of loving kindness. It's not about the words of loving kindness. It's about feelings. Okay, so that means that everybody here is qualified to do this meditation except those who have no feelings. So that usually includes Australian men to start with. According to popular report, but interestingly enough, no, that's not really true, but interestingly enough, there was a survey a few weeks ago that said that Singaporeans were the most emotionless people in the world. Anyone from Singapore here? Congratulations, yes. And a large survey of people from Singapore said, a large proportion said that they, in the previous 24 hours, that they'd experienced no emotions whatsoever. I don't know really what it could mean to say that you've experienced no emotions. But anyway, so this is like all Buddhist meditations, the most important thing about Buddhist meditations is it's based on some kind of reality. Okay? So it's not a fantasy. It's not just imagining loving kindness. It's actually the reality of loving kindness. It's the experience of loving kindness. And everything that we do in the meditation is solely for the purpose of getting in touch with that reality, okay? Of coming closer to that feeling of loving kindness, of becoming more aware of it and developing it, making it more clear. Now, of course, the thing with emotions is that normally emotions are very complex, they're very contradictory, they're very changing, they're very elusive and hard to pin down. And for this reason, that makes them a bit tricky to use for meditation, as opposed to something, say, like the breath, which is kind of always there. And I know that there are a few people, when they try to meditate on the breath, they find that they can't even really feel it, okay? But for most of us, we can at least know that our breath is there, we can experience it. And so for loving kindness, this can be a challenge. It's one of the main challenges in doing loving kindness meditation is that often you don't even know that it's there. It's like you're meditating on this feeling, but you don't even feel it. And that is probably the biggest challenge for anyone who wants to develop loving kindness meditation. How do you actually feel that feeling of metta? The simple answer to that is that there's no secret. There's no tricks. Well, there are some tricks, but there's nothing that's guaranteed to work. And people are extremely personal and very individual in their responses to it. So when we try this meditation, just give it a go. That's all we can do. Try it out here. If you're interested in it, you go home, practice it, and so on. Don't judge the meditation just by the first time you do it or the first few times or even the first few weeks that you do it. Just be patient. And eventually, maybe you'll see, ah, that's what it is. That's that feeling of metta. It was there all along. It's almost as if you suddenly notice it. And you realize, oh, actually, I do have love in me. Of course you do. Of course you have love in you. It's absurd to say that anybody doesn't have it in them. Of course they do. It's a basic human emotion. Not just humans, animals have it as well. So it's not, do I have that feeling or not? But it's can we find it? Can we focus on it? Can we like tune in on that feeling, so that becomes very clear and that it becomes more prominent and more stable within the spectrum and the waves and shifting of emotions. So, like all forms of meditation, the metta meditation is about finding those good qualities which already exist in you and developing those, citta bhavana, making more of the mind. So to help us do this, we give ourselves a meditation method. And the purpose of the meditation method is to provide a framework for the meditation to happen in. Okay, the method isn't the meditation. Method is like a frame around a painting. Right? Anybody can make a frame. It's not so hard. But what is actually in the painting, that's the meditation. That's only what you can do. So when I teach the meditation here, I'm very conscious of the fact that I'll teach, there'll be one meditation coming out of these lips here, and I don't know how many, 30 or 40 meditations going into those ears over there. And so the way you practice it, everybody will practice it in a different way and have a very different response to it. Now, we should, when we're practicing, we should give kind of a due respect and consideration to the meditation method. This is what's going to give us structure and support for our practice. But don't be a slave to the method. Don't mistake the method for the meditation itself. This is something that meditators very, very often do, very normally do. You know, people say, oh, you know, I do vipassana meditation. You can't do vipassana meditation, right? Vipassana is insight. You can't do insight. It's something that just happens. But you do a meditation method that helps and is conducive for the arising of insight. And the same thing with metta meditation. You can't do metta meditation. You do a method that's helpful and conducive for the arising of loving kindness. Don't mistake the method for the actual metta itself. So in this method we're going to be using, there's a number of features which are quite important. First is that we use a phrase or some words to help steady the mind and keep it focused on the feeling of metta. And so we begin just by wishing, may I be happy, beginning with oneself. Some people find these words difficult. I did one meditation retreat and somebody said, oh, I don't really like the word may. And somebody else said, I really have a lot of problem with the word happy. And somebody else said, oh, I'm not really comfortable with the word I. So I'm like, is B okay? We're all good with B here. So don't make a problem out of the words, all right? If you want to say some other words, say some other words. But don't think you're going to be solving any problem by that. They're just words. So the important point about it is that inside our heart, we have a wish to be happy. And using those words helps us to focus on that. And that helps us to evoke and to bring up that feeling of loving kindness. Don't worry about defining or understanding what happiness is or what loving kindness is and all of those things. That doesn't matter. You know what those things are. If we're not about defining those things, we're about getting in touch with them. So just you say the words, keep reminding yourself with meaning of the words, and then we look inside. And we should, throughout this whole meditation, keep the focus of your awareness grounded inside your body. Okay? Keep looking inside your body. Don't let the mind just drift around thinking about this or thinking about that outside. Every time the mind drifts away, keep bringing it and focusing it inside the body. This is very, very important because this is one of the things which helps us to ground the feeling of loving kindness. Because the loving kindness can very often, as a meditation, it can be very pleasant, but very kind of woofily. We can kind of float around on these clouds. Oh, it's very nice and very good and everything, but it doesn't really solidify and go deeper. It tends to stay quite shallow. So if we wanted to go deeper, we need to keep on training our attention, not by forcing, not by controlling, but just by keeping on bringing that focus back inside the body and feeling that feeling of loving kindness inside your body. Even when you're developing loving kindness for other people, you don't sort of look over there and send, you know, I'm going to send loving kindness to Aunt Sally and Uncle Fred and all that. No, just keep it inside. When you're doing metta for a loved person, again, just do it for one loved person, not everybody, okay? Why? Because this is about simplicity of mind. Okay, if you can just sit there if you like and say, you know, may Aunt Sally be happy, may Uncle Fred be happy, may Uncle Bruce be happy, and so on and so forth. And you can keep on going, that's fine, right? And this is the practice of Samasankapa, right intention or right thought of the Noble Eightfold Path. So you can keep on doing that for the whole day, and that's good, that's great, that's right thought. But it won't go any deeper than that. So if you want to go from deeper, from being just right intention to being right samadhi, yeah, then you have to simplify. Yeah? Just one person, keep the mind focused, keep on coming back to that again and again and again. And a point that I made on Friday night is that it's very important that your loving kindness be for somebody who you have a very simple and uncomplicated love for. Okay, this is the most important thing. It doesn't matter too much how strong that feeling of love is. Okay? It might be someone that you don't know all that well. But it matters how simple your love is. Metta is like a very kind of childlike emotion. It's very naive. Loving kindness, metta doesn't understand about suffering. That's compassion, right? Compassion is a richer emotion. It's a deeper emotion. Compassion understands suffering, makes a connection with someone who's suffering, yeah? Metta, loving kindness, hasn't even got there yet. It's just very childlike. It's just this wish for happiness. So as soon as you get into the complexities of emotions and relationships and all of these things, then your mind will be dragged into something more complex, harder to deal with than the simplicity of loving kindness. Always remember that great simile the Buddha said, Mata yathaniyang puttang ayusayeka puttamanurakhe, just like a mother would protect her only child with her life, in the same way that you have loving kindness for all beings. So that's what loving kindness is. Just that pure, simple love. So for this meditation, we'll do this afternoon because we only have a fairly short session together. We'll do loving kindness for oneself and for a loved person. So I want you all to think of a loved person who you can develop metta for. Just one person who's easy for you to develop loving kindness for. And then for the next 45 minutes, we'll do the meditation for those two people. And we'll start just by sitting with mindfulness and letting the mind rest, letting the mind become peaceful, and then we'll begin the loving kindness meditation. So sitting quietly. Allowing the mind to settle back inside the body. Whenever the mind starts to think about this and that, just be aware of it. Oh, okay, that's how that is. And let go. Paying attention to the sensation of touch, the pressure of the seat, the cloth on the skin. And noticing the mood, the emotion that's carrying through into this practice. Whether it's fear or joy, faith or boredom, annoyance, anxiety, love, just be aware of that. Oh, okay, that's how that is. Don't try to push it away, don't try to hold it close, just let it be, just be aware of it. And then leaving the mind focused in the heart, say to oneself the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Keeping on going again and again and again. not doubting, not worrying. And when the mind wants to doubt, just don't pay it any attention. If your mind wants to worry about things, just don't pay it any attention. Just keep on coming back to those words. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Let everything else just go through you. Not pushing it away. Not making it stay. Just letting it come and go as it wants. Only that one thing. That one thing. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And as we continue with those words of metta, notice also something deeper than the words, something more subtle than the words. And that's the feeling of metta. A very soft, gentle feeling of loving kindness. And when you notice that feeling, gently hold that in the mind, keeping it safe, keeping it close. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Letting that feeling spread out and fill up your whole body until every part of your body is soaked and filled through with beautiful, joyful, loving kindness. From the top of your head to the soles of your feet. From the surface of your skin to the marrow of your bones. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. moving to the second stage of metta, keeping the mind just as it is, and bringing in the name of that loved person. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. You don't have to think about that person. You don't have to imagine them. You don't have to go over there to where they are. Just say their name. That's enough to bring up that emotional response. Keep the feeling of metta still, settled within your body. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. finally taking that same loving kindness and spreading it out to the whole world. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Radiating out, spreading out over the whole world. May they be happy. May they be happy. May they be happy. And coming to the end of the meditation, bringing the mind back into the body, may that loved one be happy, may that loved one be happy, may that loved one be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. May I be happy. Letting the words of metta go. Letting the feeling of metta fade away. And allowing the mind to come back to a neutral space. Empty, open, and clear. And just before we finish, taking a minute to reflect and review how that meditation's gone, inquiring into cause and effect. just happened? How did I use my mind? How did my mind change during that meditation? What does my mind feel like now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? So each time you meditate, you should reflect like this. Just to bring to awareness the process of meditation. It's not so important whether you find answers to the questions. The answers will come when your mind is ready. The most important thing is just to awaken that inquiring mind. And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings finally realize Nibbana. Sadhu. Okay, very good. So we have a few short quick Q&A before we finish. Josh from the USA, how's it going, Josh? How can you carry over the loving kindness from this meditation into daily life? Well, I already gave my opinions about daily life in the talk last night. I don't think there is such a thing as daily life. But anyway, towards more negative experiences, such as sadness, depression, or anxiety. Okay, so, well, this is could be kind of a complex topic, but the simple thing is, don't try. Don't come out of your meditation and then, you guys are walking on home now. Don't walk down the road and think, oh, I had such a lovely metta meditation. I can just kind of zap everybody when I see them, walking down the street. I'll be just like a beacon of metta and walk down the road. If anybody honks their horn at me, I'll just smile and metta at them. And okay, so don't... don't do that. You don't have to make any special effort, okay? Just be natural, just be normal. What we're doing here in the meditation is we're creating a refined and a specialized environment and context that we can use to develop an aspect of emotions which we have inside us. These emotions is part of learning to respond to them, manage them, deal them with emotions. It's just part of growing up. Everybody learns how to do that. And doing metta meditation as such isn't really going to teach you anything about that. Again, you sort of compare it with other specialized activities. If you're an athlete, you're a sprinter, right? You learn how to run really, really fast. Yeah, how is that going to help you to walk down the aisle in a supermarket? Well, it's probably not actually. Maybe it will. Maybe you'll get to that can of the last can of baked beans before somebody else does. So occasionally it might be useful. But it's the wrong kind of question. It's the wrong kind of skill to be thinking of. There's a different set of skills that we bring to what we're doing in throughout our lives than the skills that we're using in meditation. And we can't replace one with the other. And we can't... it's amazing. I found it quite interesting that often you find... I don't know about often, but sometimes you find that people who seem to be very loving people, who are very loving, obviously very loving people, very kind and very thoughtful, and then they do metta meditation and they say, oh, no, there's nothing there. I can't feel any metta. Yeah. Whereas sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes people who, quite tense or anxious or... stressed out and, tend to be a bit sharp and so on. And then they do metta meditation. They have great metta meditation. Yeah? And why is that? Oh, it could be many reasons. But the point is just that there is a difference between how your mind works in meditation, that specialized environment, and how it works out there in the rest of your life. Now, that doesn't mean that these two things have no relationship to each other. That's not what I'm saying. Of course they have a relationship to each other. They're both happening in the same brain for a start. Well, more or less brainish. I'm not sure if it's exactly your brain, but you know what I mean. But the relationship between them is not, it's not just a one-to-one relationship. It's not like you just do something in your meditation and that will automatically have some kind of effect on your real world. Or that you do something in your life outside of meditation, and then that will automatically have an effect on your meditation. No, it's not that simple. These spheres of life are relatively independent. Sometimes they will have an effect in the way that we might think. Sometimes they might have an effect in a way that's quite different from how we think. It might have the opposite effect. Sometimes this happens also. Yeah, actually, this is quite a recognized phenomenon in psychology that there's this kind of what do they call it, like a feedback effect, or like if you say for the morning time, you're thinking, I'll have fried eggs and bacon for breakfast, and you think no, I'll be healthy, I'll have a grapefruit for breakfast, and then by morning tea it's like, well, I had a grapefruit for breakfast, so I can have chocolate cake for morning tea, right? So we have this kind of compensation effect. The same thing can apply in meditation. Don't think that it can't. Exactly the same thing can apply. You can do the meditation, and then afterwards, then you can think to yourself, oh, I've done my meditation now, I must have lots of metta. So if I'm going to, yell at this person, then obviously I've got lots of metta, so I'm just yelling at them out of compassion for them, trying to help them, right? So you can actually justify for yourself, right? You can use that meditation to justify unwholesome acts later on. Right? So the point isn't, I'm not saying that the metta makes you do those things. I'm saying that what happens in your life depends on what you do in your life. What happens when you're speaking depends on what you're doing when you're speaking. Right? What you've done in your meditation at an earlier time in the day doesn't determine what you're going to say at a later time in the day. It might influence it by shifting your mood or something like that, but it doesn't determine what your speech is. It's what your speech is that matters at that time. Right? How you act is not determined by how you meditated. It might be affected by it, but it's how you choose when you choose to act. So that process of what we do throughout our life is not, there's no kind of automatic flow-on effect from meditation. It's how we respond, how we choose to use it, which is important. And so that's why those aspects of our life are just as important as the meditation is. As a general rule, it's probably not such a good idea to try to use metta to overcome negative emotions, okay, especially strong negative emotions. What we end up doing is becoming kind of even more tense, because you've got one force going in one direction and then you're trying to oppose that with another force going in another direction, and it just doesn't really kind of work. So usually the best thing to do in that case, if you have strong grief or strong anxiety and so on and so forth, is you just let those things come through you. Don't try to oppose them. Don't try to resist them. Let them come through, but also don't feed them. These things are all impermanent, okay? Anger is impermanent. Grief is impermanent. They depend on causes. So we just don't feed the causes of those things. Yeah, we don't keep on ruminating and thinking in the way that's going to give rise to those feelings. We don't keep on doing those things that make those feelings come. We just let them go and let the feelings come and go as they wish and gradually let them fade away. Then when we feel and this is what we should be doing in that period of mindfulness at the beginning of every meditation, okay? So that's not about making all different emotions and stuff go away. It's about understanding them, appreciating where you're at, and then just letting the mind find its own sense of being centered and being grounded. And when you feel like you're reasonably centered and grounded, then we can begin the loving kindness meditation. Okay. Now, in some cases, if the negative emotions are more strong or more persistent for some reason, then we might want to do other things to help deal with those. But just generally speaking, that's good enough. Just let them come through, let them go, until we feel reasonably centered, and then begin with the loving kindness meditation. Okay. Nelu from Romania. Hello, Nelu. How's weather in Romania right now? Okay. Bhante, how is it possible to love as a mother loves her only son, another human being who did or does terrible things, like a person who killed other living beings? Well, what would you do if you were a mother whose son was a killer? Yeah, do you think mothers stop loving their children just because their sons or their daughters do terrible things? Yeah. Of course not. They still keep on loving them. Of course, it's a difficult love. It's a conflicted love. It's a confused love. It's full of grief and doubt or guilt or whatever it might be. But the love is still there. So within each person, we can find something that's worth loving. Having said which, if when you think about a certain person or bring the name of that person into your meditation or whatever, if you find that that's bringing up those negative feelings, anger, resentment or whatever, then that person is not a suitable person for you to be using for your loving kindness meditation. Okay, so just don't think of them at that time. So we have this, remember what I said, that this meditation is providing us with a framework and a guideline which is designed specifically to support the development of our loving kindness. So it's not about finding each person that we're going to have loving kindness for, right? It's about developing that feeling within ourselves. For this afternoon's meditation, we did loving kindness for ourselves. We did loving kindness for a loved person, right? And this meditation keeps on going with other stages. The next stage is to do loving kindness for a neutral person, and then the last one is to do loving kindness for a disliked person. And I very, very rarely will do that last stage in any guided meditations because it's very potent, it's very powerful, and it's quite difficult. You have to really develop a meditation to a much deeper level than we're able to do here in just a short guided meditation before you're really going to be ready to do loving kindness for the disliked person. I mean, what you find is that when you're doing the loving kindness meditation and you're so focused on that feeling of loving kindness, right? When you finally do bring that disliked person in, it can be incredibly powerful, yeah? Both in a positive and a negative way. When you overcome that, it's an incredibly liberating feeling. But if you don't, then it's almost like your mind can be ripped out of that feeling of loving kindness like so quickly and go into feelings of hatred and resentment and so on so fast. So that's something to be very careful with, and that's why we spend a lot of time doing the metta for the early stages first before we go on to doing loving kindness for the disliked person. Okay, so one more question here. Okay, so we come to meditate. It says here we come to meditate at 3 p.m. Every Saturday. And next time there's a special course on, can you not forget us and allocate us a space? Thank you. So this is referring to last week. We had an early Buddhism course. We hadn't forgotten you. And the space was made available over in the Dhamma Hall. But what happened last week was that when we organized the course, the idea was that the this is sort of talking about the early Buddhism course, which we did last week. I think some of you were probably there. Is that we were supposed to, the idea was that Atan Brahmali and or myself come down and teach the course, and then all the other events that normally happen here at Nolamara go on independently, and we just come and teach the course and go back. But last week that didn't happen because Ajahn Brahm, who would normally have done the afternoon meditation, he left to go overseas early on Saturday morning. So we were left without a teacher for that afternoon meditation for that day. So normally on the 3 p.m. when the early Buddhism course is on, then this meditation group will be over in the community hall. Okay, so that's it. Thank you very much, and see you again soon. Let's finish by paying respects to the Triple